Live from Aspen Public Radio, it's Valley Roundup. I'm your host, Wyatt Orme. Today, we will be discussing water. The city of Aspen is one step closer to settling a controversial water rights case involving the iconic Castle and Maroon Creeks. And Pitkin County has been squabbling with a rancher because he wanted to conserve water. All things water coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me today are some of the journalists who know water best. Sarah Torrey joins us on the phone. She's a correspondent for High Country News and a frequent contributor to Aspen Journalism. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Wyatt.
We also have Brent Gardner-Smith in the studio. Hello, Brent.
Hello, Wyatt. Happy to be here.
Brent is the editor and the executive director of Aspen Journalism. We also have Aspen Public Radio's environment reporter, Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Wyatt.
So, we are talking about something that seems especially relevant right now as we look up at a bunch of mountains that don't seem to have a ton of snow on them.
It's looking pretty bleak.
Looking pretty bleak. Did anybody go skiing this morning?
No, I have to confess I haven't been on the hills since Christmas, which as far as I can tell was the last time it snowed here in the old mining town.
How about you, Elizabeth?
No, I haven't been up in a couple days. It seems like the grass just isn't my favorite thing to ski on.
And Sarah, I happen to know that Sarah actually was recently in British Columbia, so it's not really fair to ask her if she's been skiing recently.
That's true. There was a lot more snow there than here, and I've been pretty bummed out about the lack of white stuff on the mountain.
Right. Well, there's really no guarantee that things aren't going to get worse. We could lose top-to-bottom skiing on Buttermilk, and there are some models that suggest that spring runoff could be less than 50% of average. So we obviously have a big water problem, and Sarah, you recently wrote a story about someone trying to come up with a solution. The story that you recently had for Aspen Journalism was a story about people who want the same thing but still found a way to disagree with one another. So can you kind of set the stage for us a little bit?
Yeah, so Bill Fales, who's a rancher in the Crystal River Valley just outside Carbondale, really wanted to step up and participate in a new program offered by the Colorado Water Trust, which is a nonprofit based in Denver that tries to sort of restore stream flows in Colorado by buying up water rights and leasing water from farmers for the river's benefit. And so they had proposed that he leave some of his allotted water that he uses for irrigation in the river when the river was running dry, and they would pay him to do that.
So essentially paying him not to use his water.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, can you, first just to set the stage a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about Bill Fales? Like, what's he like? You spent some time with him. Like, how does he, yeah, can you just describe kind of what it's like to spend time with him?
Yeah, he's a pretty quiet, unassuming guy. He lives on this beautiful property sort of in the shadow of Mount Sopris, and really doesn't get too riled up about things, but I could tell he was pretty frustrated by this whole situation, which, you know, has been going on, I guess, for over a year now. And I think he really thought he'd be doing the county, Pitkin County, a favor by sort of, you know, wanting to participate in this program and suggesting it. And then to have this gesture of goodwill get completely turned on him was a bit of a shocker, I think. Granted, he'd be getting paid for it, but, like, he really wanted to set an example for other ranchers and farmers, sort of a better way that they could do something positive for the environment and get something in return.
Right. But it wasn't Pitkin County that would be paying him to not use his water, is that right?
Right, but they own a conservation easement on his land, and so they have to sign off on anything to do with the land and the water rights to go with his land.
Got it. So you have this rancher who wants to do this good thing. He's conservation minded. And then can you explain why Pitkin County would sort of not be so interested? I mean, it's kind of, you would assume that the county would be all for it, but can you explain why they weren't?
Yeah, well, you can sort of thank Colorado's water laws for that. In Colorado, like most other Western states, you have this system of water law that's built on this on a fundamental principle of, quote, use it or lose it. So if you, White Orm, have a right to, say, 10 gallons of water per day, I'm just making up numbers here, from a particular river, water loss is that you have to use that full 10-gallon allotment of water, or you risk having your right reduced. So the reason why that's relevant in Bill Sales' case is that he was proposing to use less of his allotted water to help boost stream flows in the Crystal River during dry times, and the Colorado Water Trust would pay him for doing that. But the sticking point was that he was still going to grow the same amount of hay using less water. So in theory, someone could take him to water court and say, hey, Bill Sales, you've been using less water than you used to, but you're still producing the same amount of hay. That means you don't really need all the water that's granted in your water right, so it should be reduced on the principle of waste.
Huh.
And if that happened, then the Crystal wouldn't really benefit in the long run, because some other water user could then start using the water that Bill wasn't using.
And
or even worse, some Front Range, like, urban water provider could buy up the water and divert it over the Continental Divide one day.
So I wanted to ask you about that. You had a great quote from Fales where he's basically describing what's on the line for him, and he says, putting our head in the sand is not a solution. If we don't come up with something ourselves, the state will tell us what to do, or the Front Range will come knocking. Are there real examples where people are, you know, they have their water rights, they don't use it entirely, and then, you know, someone shows up and says, oh, you're not actually using it. Like, am I thinking about this in the right way, Brent?
Well, if you had asked me, I'd say it's very, very rare in Colorado. The use it or lose it boogeyman is the first thing often trotted out, but it's extremely rare that anyone's ever taken down for diverting more water than they need.
So this is just sort of, I think the boogeyman's a great way of putting that. This is kind of this imaginary foe that could kind of take everything that we have, but it's not necessarily something that shows up all the time.
We have a number of boogeymen in Colorado water. One is definitely the use it or lose it principle, which is rarely enforced. The second is the Front Range boogeyman's going to come take it. And the third is California and Vegas are going to take it. And now we have a new boogeyman, perhaps, which is perhaps realistic, which is that climate change is going to take it.
Okay. So, Sarah, is that really what's at the center of the conflict between Bill Fales and Pitkin County, the use it or lose it principle?
Yeah, I think that was a huge part of it. And I think a lot of it came down to, you know, you had a lot of people pretty high up in the water policy world sort of saying in support of Bill that, hey, this, you know, yes, that is a risk, but it's very remote. We are in support of this initiative. We think it's a good step. And then you had some people in Pitkin County, and specifically the county attorney, saying, nope, that's, you know, that's too risky. It might be remote, but it is a risk, and we've paid a lot of money for this conservation easement and the water that goes along with it, and we don't want to risk anything. So it sort of was a conflict over, like, the degree of risk you're willing to accept to do something good for the river.
Okay.
Sarah, is this a unique case? Have you seen other instances where ranchers are willing to put some water back in the river and not use their full diversion and have run into opposition?
You know, I'm not aware of any other case that specifically mirrors Bill's case, but there are many more initiatives sort of gaining ground right now where essentially their water leasing arrangements, where farmers are paid to leave some of their water in the river. And there's even in Colorado, there's even a law that was passed in 2013, a state law that protects water rights enrolled in approved conservation programs. So there's definitely a move afoot to, you know, such a recognized benefit of these kinds of arrangements. And there's a lot of people think that they should be encouraged and that this is sort of one of the ways we're going to deal with growing water scarcity in the West.
The flip side of that, of course, is that there's some people who think people are generally over-diverting. They're diverting more water than they need to actually grow the crop that they want. And so there's a lot of people who don't want to set a precedent for paying people not to take water that they shouldn't be taking in the first place.
Right. It's not exactly like the most efficient. I mean, it's sort of acknowledging something that's a practice that's already pretty inefficient.
Well, it's a rational act as a water right owner to divert towards your decree, to divert generously, as opposed to divert as little as you possibly can to grow your hay with. And so people generally over-divert. I don't want to smear a whole class of people. They're all good people with good characters, but it's a rational thing to do if you're a water rights owner. So
yeah. Sarah, does the story of Bill Fales in Pitkin County, does that have, I mean, what's the is there a resolution there? Like, what are the next steps?
Yeah, a resolution is in the works. Sort of from what I understand, they're in the final phases of ironing out the details. But from what I've heard, is it will allow Bill to leave some of his water in the river without, when it really needs it, without raising Pitkin County's fears about water rights. And the way it was explained to me, Bill would use the same amount of water, but the water trust would pay him to time his irrigation practices with the river's needs. So, for example, when the river's running low, he would turn down his headgate, and when the river's running high, he would keep the headgate on. And I guess my understanding is that in the past, he hadn't really aligned those diversion practices with the environmental needs, and so now they'll be better aligned and will overall benefit the river in much the same way as he would have if he just, you know, turned off his headgate at a certain time and used less water.
Yeah. Do you think that's a model that could be replicated in other places?
I think so, yeah. I especially, you know, it actually shocked me that, I guess, that the environmental aspects hadn't really been taken into account by him or, I guess, a lot of other farmers, just given how much they do rely on rivers.
Right.
And I think, yeah, there's a lot of important implications for other farmers out there that, you know, I don't think anyone wants to see concerns about protecting water rights become an excuse not to do good things for a river. So hopefully this whole controversy won't send the wrong message to other ranchers.
Yeah. Well, if it does, we hope that you'll continue to report on it. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. This is Aspen Public Radio. You're listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with reporters and editors in the Valley. Putting things in perspective for us today are Sarah Torrey, a correspondent with High Country News, Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism, and Aspen Public Radio's environment reporter, Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. I'm your host, Wyatt Orm, also a reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Brent, you reported this morning in the Aspen Times that it looks like the city of Aspen is a step closer to being able to take its water rights on Castle and Maroon Creeks and move them down to Woody Creek. Is that
a fair assessment? Well, I think it's more like trying to judge a poker game. You know, maybe not a concrete step, but in the poker game that is water court, the tell by the other players to the city was that we're generally in support of the settlement proposal that you've put forward. And to be more specific, the water attorneys for the 10 opposing parties in the two water court cases tied to Castle and Maroon Creek Reservoir told the water court referee yesterday that they're comfortable for another 45 days leaving these two cases on a settlement track as opposed to sending them up to a water court judge on a trial track.
Okay. When you say water referee, I just imagine someone with a black and white striped shirt and a whistle and, you know, calling the shots out there with, like, you know, Nike swishes on their feet.
You know, it's more like a nanny or someone watching a group of small children saying, okay, can you guys agree to share yet or not?
Right. So, can we take a step back? Why would the city need to dam anything?
Well, that's a very good question. I'd say it's still kind of an outstanding question in the larger water community as to whether or not the city of Aspen needs storage. One of the city's engineers this week or recently said you need 8,500 acre feet of storage, which is a pretty large amount of storage, based on this risk analysis that you had another consultant do for you, which includes a great deal of assumptions and uncertainty. So, yes, under that scenario that your consultant came up with, you need 8,500 acre feet of storage. The city adopted another study in 2016 from Wilson Water, a raw water availability and supply study, sort of much more straightforward study that said you don't need storage if you continue to increase conservation and if you drill a few wells, if you finish your reuse project, and in a worst case scenario, you don't water the golf course, you should be fine without storage.
Can we stay on this for a second? I think this is really interesting because it's like we're talking about two studies done a year apart that basically find, I mean, their findings could not be more drastically divergent. You have a study that says, you guys are good. Don't worry about it. You just keep doing what you're doing. And then you have another study that says you need thousands of acres of feet of water storage. So how is there, I just want to hammer this out, how is there that much discrepancy in findings?
It's a very good question. The city has said that they didn't think the Wilson Water study went far enough. Now, the Wilson Water study, the Wilson in Wilson Water is Erin Wilson. She's one of the most respected water consultants in the state. She's currently president of the Colorado Water Congress, and she had some expert, very highly experienced experts on her staff who are very familiar with Aspen's water situation when that study was done by her firm. And so it's got a great deal of credibility, frankly, that study. The city, however, and it looked at a lot of aggressive climate change scenarios. The city, however, says they didn't think it goes far enough, didn't think it took enough of the potential risk of climate change into account. And so they wanted to do a different type of study, which was more of a risk analysis. Okay, we see the Wilson Water study, I guess is what the city was thinking, but we have extra concerns, and so we want to run some scenarios of how bad it could possibly be.
The extra concerns being like, you know, we don't really know what climate change is going to do to Aspen, so we need to, I mean, is that what you're alluding to?
Well, I can't frankly explain where they felt the Wilson Water study fell short on climate. The climate, gotcha. There's a big climate section in the Wilson Water study. Seems like they took a hard look at it. Apparently wasn't good enough for the city. They wanted another analysis. Based on that analysis, they say they need 8,500 acre feet.
The new study uses the same data. It just analyzes it differently. Is that correct?
Well, it puts in a lot of assumptions. Like I said, it puts in the assumption that the city's not going to do any more on efficiency or conservation. Mm-hmm. It assumes that the city's going to continue to still divert, as it does out of Castle Creek, in significant amounts to water the golf course and other open space. It also assumes that the city needs enough water to protect the in-stream flows in both Castle and Maroon. And so even though the city's not legally obligated to do that, it does have a policy to try and do that. And so it builds in all these assumptions. Like, you know, we're going to – so when they do – the key to the Headwaters study, as it's called, is – because it's done by the Headwaters Corporation, is how do you define a water shortage? And so how you define a water shortage has everything to do with how big it is. Mm-hmm. And so they defined it in a particular way with those – attributes, and then they overlaid some very aggressive assumptions about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know, I can't question the credibility of the consultant or the methodology. You just have to take it at face value. This consultant came up with this scenario, and then another engineering firm came in and said, well, based on that scenario, you need this much storage.
And it seems like the very basic principle is that essentially right now, Aspen's water storage is in the snowpack.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when we look at the mountain, we can right now sort of see what we're looking at for this,
right,
for the spring at this point in time. And it sounds like the new study takes a pretty drastic view on what could happen to the snowpack.
Right. If you take a big step back, the real question is, well, all right, wait a minute. This started because, I mean, the city of Aspen's been sitting on these Castle and Maroon rights and frankly have taken no concrete steps to develop them in 50 years. And so I'm still sort of scratching my head. Well, if When did you discover that you needed storage? When did you discover that you didn't have it? You have two reservoirs that are located, at least from a plumbing standpoint, in the right place on the right streams.
You mean the ones, the
on Castle
the
and Maroon, because
now.
They're above their diversion structures. So why weren't you working to develop these reservoirs if you needed storage so badly?
Huh.
So, okay, maybe it wasn't a priority. Maybe you took a fresh look and said, hey, we don't have any storage. We really need some. But it is, I think, a very sudden concern that wasn't a concern until the conditional water rights started being debated and discussed.
Okay.
So when the city went to the water court most recently and said, we claim we need 8,500 acre feet of storage, does the water court just accept that? Like, where are we in that process?
Well, if you do the math right now, there's basically 9,000 acre feet of conditional water storage rights in the potential Castle Creek Reservoir, and there's 4,500 in Maroon. Mm-hmm. So that's 13.5. So the city is saying, well, we want to use up to that amount of water from Castle and Maroon, but only fill up to 8,500 acre feet of storage. And so they have what they're telling the opposing parties is they want to try and transfer the water right out of Castle and Maroon and store the water somewhere else. Because the conditional water right gives you the permission to store a specific amount of water in a specific place.
Okay.
And so they were saying, well, we want to move the place and fudge the numbers a little, change the numbers a little. Bad term, change the numbers. And so if the opposing parties in the cases agree that that's cool, the city still has to go to water court through what's called a change case to change the water right. And a whole new group of opposers come in and say, well, we don't think you need the water, or we don't think you should put it in Woody Creek, or we don't think you were diligent enough in the first place that you even have a water right to transfer.
Yeah.
All those arguments could come up. So it's a long road to try and simply move the water rights. Not an easy task.
Yeah. But this isn't like, is this additional water that they don't currently have, or this is just a kind of, they're taking an existing right and they're just moving it somewhere else?
I think the most important thing to remember is the city has very large senior diversion rights out of Castle and Maroon. They own Castle Creek and they own most of Maroon Creek. They have very old senior diversion rights.
Gotcha.
So that's our water supply. And so they have a lot of water rights in that regard, and are very senior. They're in the catbird seat on Castle and Maroon. Then they have these two storage rights, which are conditional, and they're conditional. It's just like the metaphor of being in line at a drinking fountain. You know, you're in line, but you haven't gotten a drink of water yet. And so the city's in line to develop these rights, but they're not absolute. They're not storing water.
Okay.
So they're theoretical rights, prospective rights, and Those are the rights that they want to transfer, but they're not touching any of their senior diversion rights on Castle and Maroon. That's okay. A rich portfolio that's not going anywhere.
Okay. I mean, if I was going to ask you that, if – I mean, is this – I guess from what you've said, this could be sort of interpreted as somewhat of a arbitrary or almost an irresponsible thing to do.
I wouldn't go that far.
Not necessarily. So I guess I'm wondering like if water is – you know, I mean, is the city just basically protecting an investment, or potentially, if water is gold in 100 years, is this just a very prudent financial move?
Well, I don't know if it's prudent financial, but it's hard to argue that stored water doesn't have value, especially in times of a drought. And if you're a municipal water provider, you wake up every day saying we have to have a secure source of water. So I certainly will concede there's value in stored water. And I will concede that if you're a water provider, it's a great luxury to have stored water. It can be very helpful. So you can't necessarily attack the motives of trying to have a reliable water supply.
Right.
Part of the issue is that you have water reality in Colorado, then you have water law, and they're not on the same page necessarily. So all the things that the city has to do in water court is kind of one type of dance almost. And you tell the water court one thing, and then you tell the rest of the world something else. Like the city's been telling the water court for 50 years, it fully intends on developing a 15-story tall dam within view of the Maroon Bells. And then you ask them about it, and they're like, that's probably not in the cards.
Huh. So you don't think that this is necessarily something they're going to follow up on?
Well, I don't think they were ever serious about building either one of the dams in Castle or Maroon, frankly. But it was pretty easy to hang on to the water rights just in case.
Gotcha.
So why not?
Okay, so in other words, that like the city, as long as they show that they are, that they're pursuing this, as long as the city shows that they are
being diligent,
they're being diligent, then like they still get to hold on to this asset.
And it's a super low bar.
Okay.
It's not like you really have to clean up your room. You just have to kick the clothes on the floor under the bed kind of thing.
Okay.
Very low bar. Except when 10 opposing parties now come in and tell the court, we don't think they've cleaned up their room, we don't think they've been diligent, then the stakes get a little higher.
And in real terms, what the opposing parties, what are their main concerns? Just to recap for people who might have forgotten.
Well, there's the Forest Service, Pickens County, 4 environmental groups, and 4 property owners among the 10 parties opposing the rights. The Forest Service doesn't think the city should build a dam on Forest Service land, and that would flood the wilderness, which is the case in both dams, but primarily Maroon Creek. The environmental organizations don't think either stream should be dammed. And the private property owners, some, 2 of them in Castle Creek, the dams would be on their property. So they're not fans.
Yeah.
And then the property owners of Maroon Creek wouldn't be necessarily directly affected, but they have concerns about the Maroon Creek Valley.
Right, right.
So those are the concerns, and that's why the opposers are telling the city, look, you move the dams out of Castle and Maroon, and you try and store the water somewhere else, we won't block you on trying to store the water somewhere else. But I also think they're telling them, but don't come back to Castle and Maroon either.
Yeah, right.
Well, and they aren't necessarily saying we have any say in whether or not you put a dam in Woody Creek. This is just saying we're concerned about this case at hand, and it seems like the next step could be a whole new set of people who are opposed to it.
Yeah, the rub, though, is like Pickens County would, in theory, if they settled with the city on these terms, give up the right to oppose the change case.
Right.
And therefore give up the right to attack the need that you need 8,500 acre-feet of storage. And so maybe they're willing to do that. I don't know. We'll find out.
Elizabeth, as you've been reporting on this, I mean, have you? What has it been like for you to report on this? On kind of this whole question of these dams?
Well, I think that certainly as a reporter, I owe a lot to Brent, who really kind of cracked everything open and brought to light the fact that the city even owned these water rights. I've spent a lot of time in this valley. I grew up here. I had no idea that the city of Aspen owned water rights in those valleys until Brent started reporting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I think it's been fascinating to kind of feel this tension between, you know, what the city feels like it needs to be reliable to reliably provide water for citizens, and also this tension over, you know, what we value in the environment and in our creeks and rivers and streams.
Yeah, great. Well, I think that's all that we have time for on this week's Valley Roundup. That's going to do it for this week's edition. Thanks so much to Sarah Torrey of High Country News. She's also a contributor to Aspen Journalism. Thanks so much, Sarah, for joining us. We hope to have you back.
Thanks, Wyatt.
Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being here.
Happy to be here.
And Brent Gardner-Smith, editor and executive director of Aspen Journalism. Thanks so much, Brent.
You bet.
I'm Wyatt Orme. I'm your host this week and also a reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Head to our website for more information on the stories we covered in this show, aspenpublicradio.org. Thanks so much for listening. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.